welcome to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood, here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
Welcome to On the Record. I'm Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today. If you'd like to download this podcast on your favorite iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, if you subscribe, you'll get them sent directly to you so you can get a head start on everybody else. So feel free to subscribe. My guest this week is Adam Tilley, President of Stanley Furniture, who's joining me here in our offices. Adam, welcome.
Thanks, Bill. Good to be here.
Yeah. I prepare every time I do these things, and so I was, going back and downloading stories on Stanley, and there was a lot written about you guys last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We tend to be a topic of conversation for lots of folks, it seems like, but,
so
yeah.
You have been there for just under a year now.
Yep, it'll be a year in April. I started April of 18.
How's it going?
It's been a fun ride. I mean, certainly, it's not exactly it's not dividends and invitations every day in the mail, that's for sure, but it's good. What we're doing is hard, and that's why I signed up to do it, was to try to do something really significant. And this is, Stanley's 95 this year. It's a 95-year-old company. It's been a pretty storied brand. I worked there before, so I really fell in love with it back in the days when we were still making stuff in Stanleytown and everything. So the idea of being able to kind of play a role in leading it into the next century or whatever you want to call it was tempting. And the fact that, you could really set the team, kind of do whatever you want to do from a directional standpoint, from a product standpoint, I thought was really, really interesting. And I've been in product development or product / marketing / sales for, I want to say, like 15 years. I mean, before that I was, doing other jobs, but I've been doing a similar sort of role for quite a long time. And it was nice to kind of take a new challenge on and I don't regret it. I mean, it's just been fantastic. What an unbelievable learning experience.
So this was your first time as a president. I want to go back.
Yeah.
Let's go back a year. I want to talk about the night before you have to go, your first day on the job.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a company that has not performed at its historically best levels.
Right.
Right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
let's...
Yeah.
And so you have a team that probably is not feeling as upbeat as they have throughout their history. They're probably feeling a little concerned, and there's a new boss walking through
right.
the door. So what was your night before like?
The night before, yeah, that was interesting, because I started 2 days before market started, I think. It was like the day before. We had one day, then the sales meeting, then showtime, basically. So,
no pressure.
Yeah, the night before, I'm, I think I spent a lot of time trying to think about what I wanted to say to the company from a, from a value standpoint, what I thought was important for them to understand. I think our business and certainly our company has been, We've had a lot of complicated things. I mean, we're a pretty complicated business. We have a long history, and we've done a lot of really innovative stuff that's oftentimes been ahead of the bell curve a little bit. And So one of the things that I wanted to make sure everybody kind of understood and I felt like would relax folks a little bit, I think everybody just needed to relax, is just say, hey, look, you know, we're going to get back to basics. Let's exchange furniture for money as often as possible. Like, that's our strategy right now. I mean, we've got good product people. We've got good operations people. We've got good logistics people. We've got great customer service people. We've got great warehousing support staff across the board. All of our team is great. Y'all just focus on, like, what you do best, and we'll see where that takes us. If it doesn't take us very far, we'll figure something else out. But for right now, everybody take a deep breath and just chill. And so that was what I wanted to kind of come across. I think I wrestled with it quite a bit, though, to be honest with you, because I think, I mean, looking back, I haven't really thought about it that much, but looking back, I think I wanted to have some sort of, you know, profound, you know, vision that everybody went, oh my God, this guy's so next level. But at the end of the day, I couldn't think of anything. So I just said, oh, heck, just get in there and kind of speak from the heart. So that was going through my mind. The first day was insane, though, because so I'd worked at Stanley for 8 years, just about 8 years, from 2008 to 2015. So I knew everybody there, basically. I mean, there was a few people I didn't know, but essentially I knew everybody there, and they knew me. And I knew all the vocabulary. I had the benefit of knowing the vocabulary. I had knowing the processes, knowing all that stuff, knowing the product line. Heck, I mean, we developed most of the product line in my prior life. So I walked up the back stairs, and I think I got to the water cooler. And the sales manager and the ops guy, they grabbed me immediately and just said, we need you in the room. Go to the fishbowl, which is our little meeting room. We've got to figure out what our market specials are going to be. We've got to figure out what our promo plan is going to be. We've got to figure out how we're going to communicate these features and benefits on the product. But, I mean, I didn't even set my bag down in my office on my first day. I went directly into a meeting. And it was just like, hey, welcome. All right, now let's get to work. Not even 2 minutes, and we were off and running. And it was not – I don't think we've stopped. So I was telling you earlier, I mean, my office is, like, still not even unpacked because it's just been running at a really fast pace, but it was good.
Told me before we went live what you have on your office wall. Tell people.
I do. I mean, I've got a lot of respect for the folks that came before me. Glenn, Albert, those guys are unbelievable, and they taught me so much. And then, there was a lot of really fond memories of hanging out with Glenn after hours, after, you know, the dust is starting to settle. And Glenn has this great knowledge of the history of the company and how Stanley and the Bassetts were kind of intertwined, and how TB kind of, I think he married Mr. Bassett's daughter and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we would sit up and have a beer, and we just kind of talked through all that stuff. It was great. It was kind of like Factory Man before Factory Man was published or whatever. So anyway, he really instilled in me, and I'm sure Albert instilled in him, a real passion for the history of our company. And so on my walls, I've got this oil painting of Stone Lee, which is Tom Stanley's mansion in Stanleytown, hanging over the desk. And then on the other wall, we found some archival documents of sales figures from back in the early 30s, late 20s. So I got that framed on Tom Stanley's original stationery with his handwriting on it. And it says, you know, like 1924 was year one. 1925, we grew the business a little bit. 26, we grew a little bit. 27 was good, and then, like, it crashed, you know, right as the stock market crashed. So you could see where the dip was and everything. And every once in a while, I mean, you know, God, so everything is so cyclical in our industry, it seems like. You know, when we're in a dip, yeah, I go over there and go, it happened to TV, too.
Right.
So,
yeah. This happened before.
Yeah. So anyway, it's cool. I mean, I have these little... It's good to have these little reminders of, like, you know, the shoulders that you're standing on. So I get a kick out of looking at it.
Obviously, when you come into a situation like that, you don't come in there to keep everything exactly the same. If everything was going in the exact perfect direction, you probably wouldn't be there and the company wouldn't have been sold to Churchill Downs and all that, right? So there's a certain impetus toward change.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I try to talk to a lot of folks about, because the whole furniture industry is going through change, is change management. How do you deal with that? I mean, you mentioned that there were so many people there who you knew.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that there was some product there that you developed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that the same product is still there that many years later. There's a lot of, I'm sure, cultural habits.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you wrestle, or how do you figure out what you want to change and what you want to maintain?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do change, getting people to change, particularly if they've been doing something for a long time, is a challenge. How are you working through that?
Well, I mean, I think I had the benefit. I mean, it's not fair for me to answer that question, because I do have the benefit of knowing a lot of the team for quite some time. I mean, I've been in the foxhole with most of those folks for a while. And so I kind of know what pushes their buttons, and I know, you know, I can read between the lines on a lot of those folks. So I have the benefit of knowing how to communicate with people fairly effectively at Stanley specifically, just because I've spent so much time there.
Right.
So, I mean, the first thing was you got to make sure that people understand it. And so if you take, I read this book about extreme ownership, which was an interesting book. But if you take if you bear the responsibility that if they don't get it, it's your fault, it's not their fault. And so you just have to keep communicating, and make sure that all your folks are totally bought in. And until you really move the company forward, I think that helps. I think there were some things that were going on, especially in the recent past. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus or anything. It's just the nature of Stanley being a public company and then becoming a private company, and then with all the uncertainty and all this stuff. One of the biggest things that I feel like I changed was I said, we're going to stop the chaos. We've got to stop, you know, the search for the magic silver bullet that's going to fix everything, you know, and we're just going to go back to you just got to take a deep breath, and let's just go back to product first and foremost. Who's doing the most business in the industry right now? Okay, what do they want? Okay, let's go make it and give it to them at a fair price. I mean, and I know that sounds so lowbrow and, you know, non-creative, but when you're so concerned about being like the next revolutionary thing that's going to totally shift the paradigm and iconoclastic, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes what Stanley needed at the time was just to be reminded that there's still a market for what we know how to do. And so let's just go do what we know how to do really well. And I guarantee you the sales will come from it. And so a lot of people kind of put away some of the frustrations and some of the energy that they were spending on things that they didn't necessarily understand why they were doing it. And so that was kind of it's kind of like anti-change, I guess. I guess you were going back to basics. But that was the change. I mean, and it wasn't that hard, because everybody was like, oh, thank God. I'm so tired, you know? You mean I don't have to worry about, you know, who's going to, you know, replace me with AI and all this other. No, just, you know, come on, let's go travel. Let's go talk to customers, find out what they want and make it for them. And so that's the strategy. But it was a pretty easy sale, to be honest.
It's kind of funny how many times this comes up. You know, people read management books and training books and all these sales books. And how many times, if you look at the companies that are really successful, it comes down to what do they do really well? Basic blocking and tackling.
Yeah.
Right? In business 101.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're in a turnaround situation, my dad was
he kind of taught me this way back in the day. You got to lay a solid foundation first. I mean, you got to spend time, especially on the product side, laying a foundation that you can stand on, and then go take your moonshot. But don't take the moonshot when you got nothing underneath your feet. And so we have spent this year really trying to just level set. And, you know, we need 10 good brown suits of furniture that hit a great price, you know, and look cool. And then we'll go and do some, you know, super, you know, esoteric deal or something like that. But it's all a plan, and the plan and our strategy first is to just is to get back to what we do best, understand what the industry needs from us, not what the industry needs in general, but what do they need from Stanley, which was a thing Tom Elias taught me over at Gorman's. It was a good quote too. Remember what Stanley does for the industry. Don't go try to be Magnuson, you know, or something like that. Be Stanley. Be the best Stanley, because the industry needs Stanley. And so, you know, trying to rediscover all that stuff, and that's the first step.
Does being private versus being public help that, you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, no offense to any public companies out there.
No,
But I mean, I worked for ART, which was an awesome experience. They were public. I mean, they're traded on the stock exchange in China. So I think this is. I worked for Robin Stuckey back in the day. Since Robin Stuckey, I think this is the first private company I worked for. I've worked for a lot of public companies, and it is. There are some nice things that you can enjoy about being private. I mean, there's some headaches too, for sure. But yeah, I mean, you don't. Everything is not necessarily out in the open all the time. You can kind of take a few steps back and invest in the business. You know, we're going to run low gross margins for a little bit because we got to make these moves to get rid of some of this dead inventory. And you don't have to worry about Wall Street coming down and hammering you because your gross margins were down for the quarter. I mean, look, we just did it. That's what we had to do. We made the decision. We moved on. We're moving on to the next thing. That kind of stuff is so freeing. To be able to do that, I remember, yeah, again, back in the day, in the early Stanley days, it was just, you know, you just have to really watch the numbers, because every quarter you got to do a report, and you know, you just can't afford to do some of the things that the business really needs to be done. So I don't know. That's been great.
You mentioned that you learned from your father, right? Build that base. Mm. You started early on in your career. You worked with your father, or worked for your father, right?
I did, yeah. I've had two jobs in my life that have not been in the furniture business. I made salads at an old folks' home, and then I cut down Christmas trees, or I worked at a Christmas tree farm. No, actually three, and I rolled nickels one summer in college at a bank. But other than that, everything's been in the furniture business. So, yeah, I started when I was 15. I started at Lineage in the warehouse, like kind of cleaning up and picking up styrofoam peanuts and stuff like that. And yeah, so yeah, and my first job, I guess technically I was working for him.
You gave that up to cut Christmas trees?
Yeah. I didn't like getting up early when I was 15 years old, I guess. But then, I've spent a lot of time in the industry. I mean, I'm 44, but I've been working in the business, 30 years? I don't know, something like that. So getting close to it.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood, here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
So what was it like the first time you kind of really had a significant position working with your dad?
I mean,
was it Thomasville?
That would have been Thomasville, working for him, yeah, directly in the same company. Yeah, I was I just left Henry Dunn. I was on the road with Henry Dunn. I came in and was national sales manager. I was working under my good friend Jamie Collins, who was the VP of sales. He's at
Home Elegance,
yeah. And started with them. It was cool because I had never seen my father in a, you know, you certainly obviously seen him a lot around the house and everything in a small environment. But I remember being in, we had a dealer convention or something like that in Hollywood, Florida. It was like the store owners symposium or something. There was a lot of people there. I mean, probably 200 some odd people there. And I remember sitting in the, and it wasn't long after I started. And I remember sitting in the auditorium and him giving a big speech in front of everybody and hearing him lead, from a, from an organizational standpoint was so, I don't know why, it was just so ingrained. I mean, that memory just is burned into my mind. You grow up and you love your parents and you have such a special bond with your family, but to be able to work for him at the time and get to be inspired by him on a professional level brings such a different dimension to your relationship. We all follow the same arc, you're a little kid and your parents could do no wrong. And then you go through the period where you're smarter than your parents and then you graduate from college. And I was still fairly young at the time. So to get this like newfound respect for your parents and like the wisdom that they had, not that I ever lost it, but just came from a different angle. It was a really cool gift to be able to do.
Well, most young people don't get to see their parents in their work environment.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I would think even a Hollywood actor or actress, right? Mm. You're on the screen, but then you go home and you're just mom or dad.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah.
Hey, how's your dad? Can I go to the store? Can I have a quarter?
Right.
Can I have $5 for whatever?
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. That is a gift to get to see your father kind of in his, in all his glory, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. It was really cool. I learned a lot.
Now, we've talked about this before. You described your father as your best friend. What was it like, though? I mean, did he ever have to have a conversation, a coaching conversation in a work environment where it was, hey, Adam, I love
slow
you,
your role.
You're my boy.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. I think.
And remember, he's probably listening.
Yeah, I know. I didn't need that.
No pressure.
No, I mean, I'm trying to think of specific ones. I mean, there's a fine line between, I'm trying to understand, are you asking, like, did I ever get in trouble at work? Sure. But that's maybe a different podcast. Well, can I cuss in this?
Yeah,
can
sure
I swear?
Yeah.
No.
We're all adults.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I don't think
no,
anybody...
I do remember there were some, sometimes, because I started off on the sales side. And then I transitioned over to the product side. Because my passion has always been product, and Tom's a product guy, and to be able to kind of follow in his footsteps was always a career goal of mine. So I got the opportunity to go over to the product side, which was awesome. And I remember those first couple of meetings where, I came rolling in hot, baby, with all these great ideas, mid-century, we need to, all this stuff way back in the day. I remember being in a couple of meetings with my dad and Tom Keller, who's, I put him up there. He's another legend, mentor kind of person for me. And I remember both going, why don't you just not talk for a little bit, right? Why don't you just listen? Why don't you spend about 6 months listening and then, then you can start a pipe up and act like you know what you're talking about. So, yeah, I got my wings clipped a couple of times in those product meetings, which was good. It was good for me.
Did it make it easier or harder that it was coming from your father?
I don't know. It didn't feel good. It probably wouldn't have felt good from anybody, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
it was frustrating. I came from retail too, so when you come from retail, when you're on the retail side, and with all due respect to all my friends in retail, retailers tend to think that the supply side guys are maybe don't know what they're doing at all in every issue, in every facet of the business. And so you come in from retail with a certain, you know, kind of like, look, I'm going to teach y'all how this really works. I mean, I've been in retail. I've been on the front lines. This is the real deal. And then, you know, you start to learn, well, this thing is a little more nuanced than it appears on the surface. I'm making furniture is a different animal than selling it out on the retail floor. And so to kind of learn, you know, why you have to make those decisions was a kind of a paradigm shift for me. And so I came blazing in with all these great ideas, and they were like, I tend to have a lot of fire in my belly, and I try to win every argument, which is probably not a good quality. So I've learned to be a little bit more open-minded, I guess.
So now the shoe is on the other foot,
yeah.
And you're now the president of Stanley, and your dad is working for you.
Uh-huh. That is true.
How's that work?
It's great. I am so appreciative to have him on the team because it has allowed me to focus on other areas of the business. I mean, if I could personally pick product for me, I mean, giving up product is like giving up your firstborn child. I mean, I just can't do it. I can never do it. But you can release more of your grip on product when you know that the person who's going to take it over totally knows what they're doing and is completely on the same page as you. And so that has been a tremendous blessing to have, is to be able to kind of release some of that stuff over to him and let him do his stuff. You know, we don't see eye to eye on everything, and we've got to kind of We still have our moments where we get frustrated with each other, and overall, we certainly wouldn't be sitting in the position that we're in right now without having him on board. I was talking to Dan Lubner at Market, and, you know, Dan and Clive, you know, they work together too. And Clive and my dad are friends, and I think Clive called Tom and said, you know, we're both now. You got to learn how to. You got to work with your son. You got to learn how to work with your son. So you got to kind of take a step back and let him make his mistakes and, you know, do all those things. And so he's kind of, Dan and I were kind of swapping some stories on how that works and everything. And you just got to be patient and you got to be respectful and you got to listen. But at the same time, you got to stick with your vision. I mean, I my vision is different from what his was back in the day. So, you know, it makes things more complicated, but it's pretty cool at the same time.
That's awesome. So I'm here with Adam Tilley, president of Stanley Furniture. We're talking about life and furniture and all kinds of interesting things. You've had to develop some new skill sets, right? Being a product guy, and you kind of alluded to it in talking about how you're able to let go of that piece.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that you've had to add to your arsenal and your repertoire to think about now as president of the company that you didn't have to worry about before as a product guy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, lots of HR has been, you know, one of the things when I was coming in, there were, you know, there's the list of like, oh, I don't want to do this. You know, like there's the fun stuff. And then there's like, I'm going to have to deal with this stuff too. And HR was always like, oh my God, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of fun. The HR side of it actually has been pretty fun, though. I mean, we've had some turnover and we've had to do some things and make some moves here and there. But it's very rewarding. It's a very rewarding side of the business to see people kind of grow and buy in and get to know other areas of the business, you know, at a personal level has been awesome. And the HR side of things has allowed me to experience that. Certainly on the financial side, we've gone from a public company that had tons of cash to a private company that, you know, has to manage cash. It's kind of a different way of managing the business. And so learning those sort of cash flow management techniques and ways to look at the business has been really, really rewarding. Challenging, but really, really rewarding. I think one of the things that I've kind of experienced over the last year is just, your mind starts to get calloused a little bit in a good way. I mean, just like your hands, when you work out hard, your hands get calloused and you can do more reps because, you know, your hands don't hurt so bad anymore.
Sure.
Well, when you have to have tough conversations on the HR side or tough conversations with a bank or tough conversations with distribution issues or something like that, you know, after a while you toughen up a little bit. And that's been really kind of fun to appreciate. That's something that I feel I've grown in over the last couple of years. It's just those sorts of issues just aren't necessarily that stressful for me anymore. And I thought they would be more stressful. So I don't know if I answered your question or not. But
sure, absolutely.
But that's been fun. And that's definitely been part of what I signed up to do when I said, hey, look, man, let's do a little bit more than just a product. I still do. I'm still involved in the product, but not as much.
Well, you know, being the president doesn't mean, you know, we talked about, I was visiting with Jeremy Hoff at Hooker last week.
And hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy. But, you know, you walk into his office and he's got product pictures all over his wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you love what you love and you're good at what you're good at. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Jeremy and I had an opportunity to work together for a little bit and we're friends. And, I mean, if you don't care about the product, I guess you could be successful, but I don't think I would do it.
Can you? I mean, is that one of the reasons
why? I don't know
why?
How to.
I mean, there have been so many financial companies. I mean, look at the history of the business, right? I mean, you read Furniture Wars, and you know all these financial companies come in, and they're going to reinvent the furniture business, and so many people.
How do you get passionate about a widget? I don't know.
How do you get passionate about a commodity?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I there's been, you know, of course, we've all experienced dark times, and you're like, ugh, I got to do something else. You know, nobody's buying furniture. I'm going to go sell apartments or something like that. Everybody seems to be making money in real estate now. And then I sit there and I think, could you really get that fired up about that? I mean, just sitting around kind of talking about, you know, brick all day or something. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. Part of why I think part of why I've grown so much in this industry is because I love the product. The product's awesome, and you can get enthusiastic about it. I mean, I try to use enthusiasm to cover up for a lot of other deficiencies. And if you're not enthusiastic about the product, it's tough. Yeah, Jeremy's a big enthusiast about product too. So
there seems to be furniture guys, and you can't see it on the podcast, but I'm using air quotes because there's a certain quality to people in the furniture business seem to be product people. They are passionate about the product, and they are, you know, it matters to them what it looks like and what it shapes like and how it sits and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the creativity side of it is such a fun challenge. I remember being in a meeting with Richard Fallon one time, and he had a quote. It was such a good quote. I'll probably screw it up, but it was, without restrictions, there can be no creativity. And what he meant by that was, like, you know, anybody can just do it. You know, if you had no limits and no limitations, you could do whatever the heck you wanted, and you could charge whatever the heck you wanted for it, and then who cares? How creative is that? I mean, some of these folks that are doing these amazing things and hitting amazing price points and being able to take product and fit it inside of boxes so it's FedExable and blah, 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 blah. That is unbelievable creativity in my opinion. And so tapping into, you know, putting some restrictions on yourselves and keeping the lane pretty tight and still doing some things that are really unique. That's the game that is so much fun. It's so much fun. How you can really stay in your lane but then shine at the same time is something I really get excited about. So,
well, I mean, how many times do you see these designs, and whether it's furniture or other things, where somebody just creates something, oh, isn't that cool? And then as you start to explore, it's like, yeah, but it looks really uncomfortable, or yeah, it doesn't really work, or...
Yeah, right. I mean... Absolutely. I mean, I think...
Where it's a solution for a problem that doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist, exactly. I think there's a lot.
Yeah, well, I came from the housewares business.
Yeah. Right?
And that is an industry that is filled with solutions for problems that don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, products that there's 47 ways to replace a basic knife. Right?
Mm.
Do I really need 7 gadgets to cut a strawberry?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've definitely gone down that route. I mean, there's been some things. I'm trying to think of some crazy ideas that we had in the past. Usually it's when we start tinkering around home office, we think, you know, we're going to create some functionality that's going to redefine home office. At the end of the day, people are like, give me a place to plug in and sit my laptop and make it look cool. I don't know, but I'm probably underthinking that. But anyway, yeah, it's the product side of it's awesome.
Get away from business for a second.
Okay.
You worked for your dad. You worked with your dad, and mm-hmm. now you are a dad.
I am.
Yep. You have a boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Either of them likely to end up in the furniture business?
This is a direct quote. My son's name is Gray. My nephew, who is the son of John Jokinen, the son of Big John Jokinen of EJ Victor, so we're all furniture people. Thomas, who's my nephew, and Gray, who's my son, were playing football in the backyard, I think it was last November or whatever. And Gray asked Thomas, what do you want to be when you grow up? And Thomas said, professional baseball player. And Gray said, yep, I want to be a professional football player. And then my daughter, Caroline, said, you know you guys are probably not going to be professional athletes. What are you going to do if you can't be a professional athlete? And literally they both looked at each other and said, I don't know, probably the furniture business then. And then Gray said something like, I think my dad will give me a job. Maybe he'll make me a vice president or something. So... I don't know what that says about them. You know, maybe I need to expose them to some more things, to be honest with you. But
has he seen you at work? Have you taken him to work?
We brought him to market a couple times. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he likes to – we've got a kids line. He likes to jump around on the kids line stuff. And my daughter's showing some signs that she wants to be in – you know, she's got a little interior design sort of sparkle in her eye. My wife's an interior designer. So, you know, they probably – they may be. They may be in the home sector somehow.
Well, you actually have a lot of family in the business.
I do. I do. I do. My mom is in Home Accents. My dad works for Stanley. My wife's an interior designer. My brother-in-law is head of sales for EJ Victor. My sister's in advertising, so she's kind of close to it, but... yeah, no, it's a fairly...
So what's Thanksgiving like right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I know. I mean, we got to... I think Dad and I, at one point, were like, man, we got to just, like, not talk about work. We got to get away from it. No, it's pretty good. And, we do a pretty good job of not getting too worky around the Thanksgiving table. The kids usually distract it from everything else.
But it's funny. I remember this movie back in the 90s, American President, and there's, you know, 5 people, mm-hmm. right? Michael Douglas, mm-hmm. and Annette Bening. And... all of his staff are standing around at a Christmas party at one point, and they say to each, you know, they start talking about work, and at some point somebody says, can't we talk about something other than work?
Yeah.
And so there's this pause, and they all kind of look around, and they realize, no.
No, we don't have anything to talk about.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds kind of like,
yeah.
you know, absent furniture.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do other than furniture? What do you do for fun when you try to just... get it out of your head for a little while. What do you like to do?
Yeah, you know, I like to be married to my wife. I like to be a father to my kids. And I know that sounds corny, but I don't do a whole lot other than that right now. I mean, you know, you go work out and do all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's fun and all, but...
what do you like to do with the kids? Are you a movie guy? Do you like to go to a park?
Well, I mean,
toss the football around?
They're kind of sporty kids, and so going to events is cool, and seeing them succeed, and just getting out in the backyard and throwing the ball around is great, and you know, it's being outside and relaxing and hanging out with them and seeing them grow, and you know, just kind of trying to be a good husband to my wife, which is sometimes harder than it should be. You know, I mean, I get distracted a lot, but. Yeah, no, I'm not, you know, I'm a pretty boring guy when it comes to stuff like that, I guess. As they get older, I'm sure I'll figure something out. But
well, it's an odd thing.
Play golf again or something.
It's funny. That's kind of the thing. I went through this myself. My son is now 29, right? Mm-hmm. So I had that period. And at some point, they get a car, they go out, and it's like they don't want to be around me anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, what am I going to – because they become such a focal point of their life.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, everything centers around getting to their game, their thing.
I'm not there yet. And so I know that's coming. So I just don't really – I mean, that's what I want to do. I mean, that's what I want to do.
And it's the best.
Be around them, yeah. I mean, hang out. Spend, you know, maybe not quality time, but quantity. I think it's pretty important. So, you know, it's pretty cool. I love it.
So it sounds like if you weren't in the furniture business, what else could you? Yeah.
You know, the dentists I've noticed, they don't work that much. You know, they don't work Fridays, and they kind of cut out early and play a lot of golf and all that. I could have been a dentist. That would have been good. I would have never passed the math part, though, yet. But, other than that, I don't know. Furniture, it's just kind of what it is.
All right. So we've got just a couple minutes left.
Sure.
Why don't we wrap up a year from now, if we have a similar conversation mm-hmm. about Stanley, right? You're talking about you want to lay the base. A year from now, where would you like Stanley to be? And I'm sure nobody will hold you to this.
Bigger and more profitable than it is right now, of course. No, you know, we need to always strive to be as vertical as we can be on the backside of things. I mean, I think that's so important with the Trump tariffs coming in and the disruption going on in Vietnam and the capacity grab that's going to be going on and all the chaos on the supply side of things. You've got to have a clear grip on your supply chain. It doesn't mean that, you know, you got to own all your factories and, you know, you never need anybody else's help on anything. But you got to have a clear grip on you know, the supply side. You can't just the days of just going around with a PO book and a set of sketches and praying somebody makes it for you is just it's just not a good business model. I mean, that's we're not adding enough value, and I think a lot of our customers will tell you they don't want to pay for somebody who's just kind of knocking stuff off and not doing anything else. So in a year, you know, we're going to be controlling more of our destiny from a supply chain standpoint. I mean, we'll probably own some stuff, and we'll have solidified some really important relationships with some key vendors. That's the part that just makes you or breaks you. It makes or breaks the retail guys too. I mean, that back end is just so important.
Churchill Downs has pretty deep roots in Vietnam.
I mean, they do.
Walter's been there since 1995. Your CEO is headquartered in Vietnam.
Yep.
Do you feel like that's helped?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? It's been huge. We have a really, really good understanding of what goes on in Vietnam from a who's a player and who's a poser kind of thing, to the way the political side of things work, to how to attract talent, you know, from different pools of the population in Vietnam. I mean, Walter's business, I mean, he's got a beer business, he's got an insurance business, he's got a marketing business, he's got a data mining business, he's got a pharmaceutical business. So he has the ability to pull talent from all of these different sides of Ho Chi Minh City, which is an unbelievably world-class city. I mean, it's so awesome. So we can go out and work with really sophisticated, cutting-edge folks that are in Ho Chi Minh that will springboard us way past where we would be if we were coming down from another country and going, I don't know, let's talk to this guy over here and see if it'll work out. So to being a local company as far as Ho Chi Minh is concerned has been a tremendous, tremendous asset for us. And Richard, to his credit, you know, he saw the Vietnam thing coming 5 years ago, 7 years ago. And we've been rooted deeply in Vietnam for quite some time now. So, it's been good. It's been really good having them over there. I consider it a tremendous competitive operating advantage for us. So,
well, that's a good place to stop on a positive note.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. This is a pleasure.
Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Good.
Good to be out of the office a little bit. It's nice.
There you go. I wish the weather was nicer. Yeah, but well, thanks for joining us on The Record.
Sure.
My guest has been Adam Tilley, president of Stanley Furniture. And we hope you'll join us again next week.